But the big change for the people we tend to work with is that that information that was being shared with people in e-commerce and in marketing and at the stores is now quickly making it over to the people in supply chain and the people that are doing design and development of the products. And so it's gone from, hey, you know, sustainability and social responsibility, you know, is a nice to have to being, it's pretty darn mandatory right now.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP. And with me on the podcast today, I have my special guest, Steve. Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Happy to, Tom. Hello, everybody. My name's Steve Reardon. I guess my background, my formative years, my career were spent in department store retailing. Then I like to say I turned to the dark side of management consulting then after business school in about 1988 or so. Since then, I kind of rose to the ranks and have been a partner in several prominent consulting firms. And then most recently, I joined a specialty management consulting firm called Calypso with a K. And as of May 2020, we are now part of Rockwell Automation. In my time at Calypso, I guess for the first 9 years, I was a global director of our consumer vertical. And then in the last several months, I shifted roles and I'm the global director over our supply chain business.
Yeah, so you're in the ideal place in that case, given this is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. So what is it that Calypso concentrates on and, you know, what kind of problems are you solving for people?
Yeah, we're considered a specialty firm because we are, I would say, functionally specialized. So we don't do all things for all CXOs. So we like to help clients that are in what we call the digital thread. So the digital thread is what we think is the discovery, create, make, and sell of new products. So you think about the functional leaders that lead that. We help them with strategy, technology, organization, and process work. And that's really, you know, the kind of secret sauce of Calypso.
Okay. And you specialize in apparel, is that correct?
So my role right now is across all industries and really across the whole supply chain. But my, you know, my personal practice area for a really long time has been with companies that specialize in and around apparel. So that could be, you know, traditional store-based retailers. It could be brands that sell through wholesale or have their own direct-to-consumer, or it could be digital native retailers.
And people listening to this podcast come from all walks of supply chain and all industries, because supply chains span all industries. Mm-hmm. So many people listening might not be familiar with the apparel supply chain and any of the kind of idiosyncrasies it might have as opposed to any of the other supply chains. Do you want to give us a bit of context? What is it that's interesting and unique about the apparel supply chain?
Yes, I'm going to kind of talk about it from, you know, ideation and inception. But most of those three kinds of companies I described, retailers and brands and digital natives, they'll initiate a design and a product development process. That's often done in a New York location. It's kind of the design centers for a lot of these companies. And then they'll have a headquarters location somewhere else where the details of the product development process take place. And then they'll go and look to produce that or source that through third parties. So most of the supply chain in apparel, you know, 95% of that is not produced by the brand or the retailer themselves. And so oftentimes then that product is cut and sewn in Asia or maybe Central America. And then it's, you know, it's put on a boat, shipped to, you know, a lot of times a Western region, Western country that makes it to a distribution center or fulfillment center that either goes on to stores or goes directly to a consumer. So probably the, you know, the biggest thing is that it's, you know, it's internal design, but external production.
Okay. Kind of like the Apple model, where it's designed in California, in Cupertino, and then manufactured typically in China.
It is. And what's interesting is that supply chain, I guess, you know, it's sort of 20, 25 years old right now. But there was a pretty consistent migration from goods being manufactured by these companies in the U.S., kind of all U.S. centered, to steadily moving offshore, which really accelerated in the 90s. And it's to the point now where it's almost all, you know, offshore production right now.
Okay. That has probably been, I suspect, heavily impacted by the happenings of the last 2 years with COVID. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, I think that it has. So it was difficult to execute during COVID when geographically you were trying to coordinate between people in New York, people in a headquarters location, which let's just say it was San Francisco, and then people in Hong Kong. So it was really a big challenge from a supply chain visibility standpoint and a really big challenge from a supply chain collaboration standpoint.
Okay. And what about shipments of goods?
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that happened and made the headlines is that, you know, everybody kind of panicked when the world shut down. You know, retailers, like everybody, panicked because they had, you know, made commitments to inventory to show up in stores that weren't even open or websites that weren't even, you know, really selling. And so there was this initial, you know, cutback on commitments to orders, even orders that were, you know, on their way, and at least a postponement of that. And that, you know, they really rippled through the industry and really made it difficult on the manufacturers. And then by the time you got to the point where, you know, demand rebounded, it turned out, you know, we need to hire back people, we need to get more containers, we need to find more ships. And the demand actually was exceeding the rate of demand prior to COVID. And so now we've been in this, you know, constant catch-up mode in the industry right now, trying to keep up with demand. And you can see even...
And what kind of changes are happening off the back of that?
Yeah, so I think there was a lot of changes beginning to happen prior to COVID, and COVID really accelerated that. So one of the key tenets of this overall supply chain is really labor arbitrage. So one of the reasons why so much production moved to Asia is because, you know, labor was significantly cheaper, and the tax, duty, and tariff environment was super friendly, you know, for doing that. And so, you know, before COVID, those, you know, the costs, the labor arbitrage gap was beginning to close, and creating, you know, the need to begin to look at other opportunities. And really what started to happen is if you were, you know, that the global head of supply chain for a retailer or a brand, and you had designed your supply chain, you know, and optimized it for the last 25 years, sort of little by little, those design assumptions had been changing.
And what was the consequence of this then?
Well, it's being unprepared for COVID and really unprepared for the world as it's evolving. So if I think about maybe breaking it into a couple parts, so if you're head of supply chain, you're trying to optimize in retail for, you know, lowest landed cost to your distribution center. You know, cost has been such a big factor. Big retailers have driven that as a strong demand. You want to do that at, I'll just call it, just enough quality, and quality that's good enough that the value proposition for the price makes sense. And you're trying to optimize inventory. So you've got a supply chain built with just-in-time inventory. It's got, you know, long product development cycles, relatively predictable tax, tariff, and duty environment. The demand variability, you kind of understand it pretty well. At that point, there were no epidemics or pandemics that really mattered. There were no climate disruptions that mattered. They weren't having to worry about cybersecurity. And so your supply chain was built to optimize cost. It was also in a world where, you know, most of retail was done through the stores. And so we were a supply chain all really built around moving cartons around. Mm-hmm. And so if you're, you know, you could take like almost every element of what leaders designed for over the last 25 years and recognize that those underlying design assumptions have changed. You know, so some of the things I had mentioned, but, you know, there are faster and faster fashion cycles. So fashion cycles used to be, you know, if you're trying to land product, you might land product for 2 times a year, maybe 4 times a year. But now cycles are lasting, you know, days and weeks. Those product development life cycles overall in retail are about 42 to 90 weeks. And now folks are doing, you know, you've got other models that are doing them in 16 weeks competitively. And then, you know, we know that the, you know, the tax and duty environment, because of some of the trade tension, has really created difficulties, mm-hmm. you know, in the apparel space, and also created opportunities for others. And we've had floods that have impacted factories. We've had, you know, social unrest in areas like Africa, where some companies have tried to move production out of Asia into China. You know, your headquarters in China has experienced social unrest for the last 18 months. And now both your customers and your employees are being much more emphatic about what they expect you to do from a sustainability standpoint. So literally everything you plan for has changed right now. Yeah. And so as a supply chain leader, as you think about how to make those changes and what levers to pull and where to focus, it's just a new game.
Yeah. I mean, as an outsider, the two things that I would have, I guess, seen having an impact on this sector, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but would be the shift to direct to consumer would be the first one, which, you know, to your point, you alluded to mm-hmm. there, shifting from, you know, moving boxes around. And the other one, I think maybe not, is I think with fewer people going to the office, there's probably a shift from shirt and tie or, you know, business casual to more casual. Is that another fair assumption?
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
It is. When I talked a bit about the variability of demand, so trying to understand those fashion cycles and trends, they moved around a lot during COVID. So I just realized I didn't directly answer your question about the impact of COVID. So you helped me pick up on that. So I think there's three things that happened in the industry under COVID. The first one you mentioned is this dramatic shift to e-commerce. And what that caused is, well, really two things, is that every company got really, really smart, really quick around picking up demand signals through e-commerce. So really understanding what's selling, what's not, rapidly turning that into, you know, what we need to bring to market, what we need to develop, you know, product-wise. And then the second thing is that just the number of goods shipped in eaches, not only from a distribution center to a consumer, but quietly what started to happen during COVID is some of the manufacturers that were sitting on canceled orders in Asia, you know, threw up websites, created a brand, and started shipping direct to consumer from Asia.
Wow.
Yeah, as a way to save their businesses with inventory that they, you know, had already committed. So that big jump to e-commerce was one of them. The second is the retail industry collaborates and designs through the use of two-dimensional CAD drawings. So most every bit of apparel historically, you know, has been designed in Adobe Illustrator. And unlike aerospace and defense and automotive and everybody else that's used 3D forever, this industry has not used that. And so that those 2D designs get turned into 3D physical prototypes and samples. And so the way that product development design is done are these numerous iterations of physical samples with people sitting around a physical table, touching and feeling the product. Well, it turned out in COVID, no one could do that. Right. And that just wasn't possible. And so the introduction of 3D design and collaboration just jumped overnight in retail. So you couldn't collaborate otherwise without having a better representation than 2D of a product to make, you know, important decisions. So a big part of our work right now is helping companies make that jump, you know, from 2D to 3D. Then the third thing that happened was I mentioned that the product development life cycles are maybe 42 to 90 weeks, mm-hmm. you know, for clients. And what they realized is that was just a luxury. You know, they were having to make decisions, binding decisions, much more quickly. And then as they saw the results of those decisions being productive and powerful in the market, they just realized they don't need product development life cycles that are that long. They know that they can make binding decisions. You know, retailers are notorious for a key milestones in development, second guessing their choices, having another look, you know, changing a lapel length here, changing a pattern there. That I think what they're learning is they're not, for that incremental time, it's not getting incrementally better. And so that ability to make, you know, more rapid decisions in a shorter time frame, that they're making them closer to market and therefore making better decisions, higher sell through, you know, the ratio of what they develop to what gets sold is better and better. So those three things have really helped the industry, you know, during this time of COVID.
Fascinating. Is there also a greater awareness of the supply chain itself amongst consumers? And what I mean by that is, you know, there seems to be a rising awareness of things like slave labor in supply chain. Is that a trend as well that you're seeing?
It is. So some of the data shows the consumer, especially under 35, you know, 2/3 of them are making product decisions based on sustainability, social responsibility, you know, some ethical, you know, ethical guidelines as they make their purchases. So it's definitely factoring in. I think the big change for the people we tend to work with is that information that was being shared with people in e-commerce and in marketing and at the stores is now quickly making it over to the people in supply chain and the people that are doing design and development of the products. And so it's gone from, hey, you know, sustainability and social responsibility, you know, is a nice to have, to being, it's pretty darn mandatory right now. Now, I would say that the industry, you know, it's kind of old news around, you know, the slave labor and like that. That's been fairly cleaned up. But things like, you know, how I'm disposing of the water when I do dyeing, you know, how am I selecting the materials that go onto the products, and where do those materials come from? You know, is the composition of those materials going to be effective in the afterlife as we think about putting things into landfills? And so that consumer awareness that, again, chiefly fell on the ears of the marketing folks has rippled all through these retail organizations now.
Fascinating. What will the apparel supply chain of the next 5-10 years look like? What are the trends you're seeing there?
Yeah. So I think we're going to bring to market fewer, better products. So there's going to be, on net, you know, fewer products to move around. I think those products are going to be brought to market, designed, developed, and brought to the supply chain through a large number of small nodes versus right now a small number of large nodes. And it's going to be more globally distributed and not so concentrated in Asia, and particularly China. And it's really for two reasons. One is some of the challenges from a stability standpoint and a trade war standpoint in Asia, but also because so much of the product is consumed in Western countries that the idea of nearshoring and even onshoring right now gets you closer to the point of recognition of the demand signals. And so you can just turn products in smaller sizes quicker to the point of demand and not have so much inventory in the system and so much long lead time in the system. So I think you're going to see that play out. You know, traditionally, most of the supply chains in retail from a technology standpoint are really supported by I'll call it transactional technology. And I think, you know, some of the things we're working on is bringing in AI and IoT and 3D modeling and simulation into the world right now. I think we're a couple years away from people really picking up on distributed ledger as part of the model. Mm-hmm. But applying those technologies to get smarter about sensing what's going on in the market and having better visibility, you know, throughout the supply chain are definitely high priorities for companies right now. And then just being a partner with your development and design colleagues to just dramatically shorten the product development lifecycle is another big a big focus area right now for a lot of people we're working with.
Cool. Really good. Okay, Steve, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there anything that I have not asked that you wish I had, or any topic we've not addressed or touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of the things I thought we might talk about, but is it appropriate for me to ask you a question at the end of this?
Sure.
Yeah. So, you have a lot of really, and I've listened to a lot of your podcasts, you have a lot of really interesting, you know, senior leaders in supply chain, and they represent a lot of different industries. So, you know, a lot of the conversations we end up in right now are really about, everybody gets, they have a lot to do, but it's around prioritization. So if you were to advise all of us that are on your podcast and we were down to our last dollar to spend to make the supply chain better right now, where, you know, from your view, where would you spend that dollar?
I'd want more than one. And thank you for asking the question, because I think this is about, we're close to 190, if not more, episodes recorded and published at this point, and no one has done that before. So I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Sure.
There are a number of things that people need to prioritize, and I would say they are linked. Sustainability and digitization would be the two main things that I would say people need to be looking at. Digitization, because you really need to have as much visibility as possible down throughout your supply chain. And that kind of visibility is only possible through having everything, or as much as possible, digital. And sustainability is hugely important for many reasons, some of which we've outlined already. Things like consumer demand, also employee engagement, also regulatory. So there's lots of different things. So that's only going to become more important. And in fact, I mentioned the two are linked, because a lot of getting your sustainability story right revolves around having digitized systems in place for similar reasons. Again, you won't have visibility or access without it. So for doing things like setting targets, measuring and reporting against them for things like emissions or water, as you talked about, these kind of things, you can only do that if you've everything digitized beforehand. So those would be the two things. So I might spend 50 cents on one and 50 cents on the other of that dollar you gave me.
Yeah, that sounds great. And it maps really well to your two podcast series. So it makes complete sense.
So I might be biased in that case.
At least you're consistent. That's good.
There you go. Steve, that's been fantastic. If people want to know more about yourself or about Calypso or any of the things we mentioned in the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Maybe two things. Our website is Calypso. It's KAALYPSO.com. And you could go there and search on my name, or my email address is steve.riordan, R-I-O-R-D-A-N, at calypso.com.
Brilliant. And I'll have a link to your website in the show notes as well, so people can access it easily enough. Great. Steve, that's been fantastic. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks. I really enjoyed it.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital-supply-chain, or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.